Steve.
Thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. We will be here for the next 2 hours, time period just slightly shorter than Anthony Scaramucci's reign as in the White House.
How about that? I got to tell you, how about that?
Are you, you know, you can't be surprised by it. You can only be surprised by how short it was, but not that it happened, just that it lasted only 10 days, right?
Was he just brought in to fire Reince Priebus and then get let go?
Yeah. That's a tactic that's used in radio sometimes. They'll bring in somebody and they'll get rid of everybody and then that guy gets fired. You've seen that happen.
I've seen it happen.
It happens a lot.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just
they
more...
bring in like a, in a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies, they have a character who's a cleaner.
Yeah, right.
You
right.
Know? So,
I was going to say the closer, but you're right. It's the cleaner.
He, Scaramucci was like the Harvey Keitel of the White House. He came in with the goal of getting rid of everybody. He fired himself. I mean, essentially, kind of, sort of.
We now have, instead of Mr. Pink, Mr. Orange.
Yes, we do. Yes,
I just, honest to God, I always feel like, you know, I wake up. This happened after we got off the air yesterday, a big announcement. I heard Steve Bertrand break into a traffic report to get this out there. And I remember just looking at the radio in my car with my mouth open, like, what's next? Nothing surprises me anymore.
Right. It's almost impossible to be surprised. And I said to Kevin before the show, I don't remember anything in my life being so hysterically funny and so frighteningly tragic at the exact same time.
I can't even say
both.
It's funny.
It's funny because it's so... it's
peculiar
just so,
funny.
Yeah. It's like... it's so unexpected that there's like no, it's relentless. Like it doesn't stop.
Wendy,
you know?
I think too that we've seen so much of it now that it doesn't register. But you had a guy who was hired last week by the president and he was fawning over him at the podium talking about how he could throw a spiral through a tire.
Right.
Or sink a free throw in a top coat.
Right.
I mean, just the things that
all the
are,
things you'd want in a guy for
well,
that position.
I mean, and sure, maybe you do, but just the language or the way that the things that we're saying or the way we're talking about things now has just never been from the White House, ever.
Well, that's what's so surprising to me. You know, if this was involved in the Apprentice television show or
right.
just even in anything Donald Trump was doing in his business, I'd be like, oh, that's Donald Trump.
Right.
But I keep forgetting he's our president.
Yeah, take it. So think of Obama, who was a, you know, he's a big basketball player, right?
Yeah.
So he names some guy to be his communications director, and the guy's at the podium saying, the guy can shoot a three, man. I am with him. He can shoot a three with a hand in his face. You know, it's just not the, those aren't the things we say.
Unless you're hiring Steve Kerr to be the communications director, then that's a great move.
Is he in the running?
I don't think he is in the running.
You never know. See, can I just say, you never know. You say things and go, oh, that could never happen.
But would you agree that Donald Trump, if anything, has the most incredible knack of hiring the most wrong person for every job? He just consistently finds the worst qualified person for every job, and they get the job over and over and over again.
And was Sean Spicer let go, or he left because Scaramucci came in, but now Scaramucci's gone? It's just
Steve, how did that play out, do you think?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, you're asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were very vocal and they didn't want him, and it probably was, the handwriting was probably on the wall for Spicer when Scaramucci came in. I don't know that if he was fired, you know, that day, or if he just said, look, clearly you guys are done with me here.
Right.
Because, you know, he was kind of in the running for that job.
He was.
Or was doing that job on an interim basis. So,
yeah.
Was he back to the Easter Bunny?
Yes. That Sean? Was the one. If there's one bright spot in this, is that Sean Spicer gets to continue in his original role as the White House Easter Bunny. So,
spicy bunny.
Very spicy
I just
bunny.
Don't even know what to expect. I guess I expect the unexpected. That's all I can expect.
Do you watch John Oliver's show?
No,
on
I
HBO?
Do not.
All right. So it's normally on every Sunday, but for some reason it wasn't on the last 2 weeks. It was planned that it would be off for 2 weeks. And then when he started the show up on Sunday, he started out by saying, look at all that's happened in just 3 weeks, because there are things that happened at the beginning of the week last week that you say to yourself, well, that was months ago. But it wasn't months ago. It was 5 or 6 days ago. There's just so many things that just keep happening over and over and over that the element of time has been stretched to new extremes that we're not used to.
How's his marriage? Because I know she didn't want him spending all the time with Donald Trump and was embarrassed about it. It was the icing on the cake. But Now he's going to have some time.
So do you? Oh, so I see what you're saying. So maybe
is she going to change her mind?
Maybe.
Even though he texted and said, "God bless our baby."
Yeah. So heartwarming, wasn't it?
It kind of was, Bill. He put an emoji, a little one tear emoji, like I wish. You
which
know.
He then fired. Which hardly ever happens, but he fired the emoji.
Don't you just wonder what each new day brings?
You know what I wonder?
What?
I wonder if Donald Trump is firing these people personally. I say that only because, you know, he's got a public persona of this, you're fired.
Right.
You're fired. What are we going to tell him if he doesn't get the votes? You're fired.
Right.
And the reporting seems to be that he doesn't actually pull the trigger.
The guy who patented the phrase "you're fired" is too sheepish to physically fire people on his own.
I don't know.
He gets a henchman.
There's some reporting to that, but I mean, I would just be interested in if he called him in and said, "Anthony, you know, you shouldn't have said that. It's not going to work." Or there's a new general in town, literally.
Yeah.
Or if he'd let that for someone else.
Oh, I wonder. I wonder.
I don't know.
All right. So, yesterday, as this was announced, yesterday afternoon. On most of the cable stations, on most of the satellite stations, they were saying that he, Anthony Scaramucci, a.k.a. the Mooch, stepped down.
Yeah,
but
he resigned.
Then later they were saying that he was let go by the White House.
Well,
so it's a compromise, right? They say to him, it looks more honorable if you step down, but essentially we're telling you you're going to resign, right?
Right, and I don't think they care if it looks more honorable. I don't know. If you get wind of you being fired, don't you resign first? I mean, I quit ISU before...
You can't fire me. I quit.
Yeah. There's got to be some element to that.
I quit ISU before they quit me.
Before they explained to you that maybe it was...
I resigned from Illinois State University.
That's one of those responses that you never should take at first glance. You know, why someone left.
Right.
You know,
right.
They were, you know,
you might want to look into it a little bit.
It may, well, you know, in some cases they may ask for someone's resignation.
Right.
If in some cases they just come out and say whatever they want. I mean, I was listening to the White House briefing yesterday and, you know, they seemed to imply that Scaramucci resigned, but then they said the president thought his terms were inappropriate for his office.
So you say to him, if you're Donald Trump, you say, we need to accept your resignation, you know, in some roundabout way.
The president would like for you to resign.
Right, yeah. Right.
It would be best for the country. Right. I mean, it's the same thing with, I'm going to go spend more time with my children.
Yeah.
That
I didn't spend time with when they were first born.
Right. That I haven't spent time with for the first 52 years of their lives.
Right.
We go live now to listener Jim on the line, who's called us at 312-981-7200 with a very good question. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Your question?
My question is, with Donald Trump hiring and firing all these people, what is their compensation when they're let go? Are they taken care of for great lengths of time, or is their pay stop immediately?
Steve, do you know the answer to that?
And can I just ask, he wasn't really officially, I guess he was hired, but he didn't start his position
yet.
His
start date was in the middle of this month,
August 15th.
I'm always interested because people get so wrapped up in, are they going to get a pension? Is this guy going to get a pension? You know, no, I thought I read somewhere where he wasn't going to take a check anyway. He's a gazillionaire. He doesn't, you know, he's not going to worry about what his exit pay from the White House.
I
think that's a great question, though, Jim, and people are hung up about that because it seems
always.
Silly.
But isn't there like a lemon law with politicians like there is with cars where you get to drive it for a couple of days and if it's awful, you get to bring it back?
I heard some comedians
Orange
say
law.
He didn't work a full pay period.
He didn't.
Thank you, Jim. Great question.
He missed it by 4 days.
To resign before you even start is good. Man.
It's amazing. It is amazing.
It's efficient. You get your work done.
Right. Move on to something else.
I'm moving on.
So what do you see him doing now? I mean, what
well,
does
he... Well, he has a big business that he
he's
was
a hedge
trying...
Fund guy.
Yeah, trying...
Well, Skybridge... You know,
yeah.
I will ask John Najarian about this on the business lunch.
All right.
I know you guys will be otherwise occupied, but... Yeah. He's tight with Scaramucci, and he's been talking up Scaramucci for months.
Really?
Yeah, and so last week when we talked, after he'd gotten the job, you know, he was expecting big things. So I don't know what he's selling SkyBridge, but he was selling that maybe to take the government job, and then there's questions about it. There were questions yesterday where his friends were saying that he told him he was going to the Import-Export Bank, which is a government job. Mm-hmm. And then the White House was saying that there were no plans for him to work in government. So it's not very clear.
But when somebody's hiring Anthony Scaramucci and they're looking at his resume, won't they go, it says here, Anthony, that you worked for the White House for, no, this can't be right, 10 days? That can't be right.
Bill, he's got a gazillion dollars.
So he doesn't care.
He doesn't care what's on his resume, yeah. I don't think.
I would like to buy a used car from him.
Let me put it a different way. He's the sort of guy who will create his own job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's not going to go for an interview somewhere.
Right. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We've got plenty of stuff to discuss with you. Stay here. Oh, later on, tickets to the smash Broadway hit Madagascar can be yours. That'll happen before we leave regular radio at 12. Stick around for that. And like I said, a lot more stuff. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I'm not proud of this, but there's a phrase that I say a lot, which is a very, very negative phrase, but it's proven to be true many, many times, and that is no good deed goes unpunished. I hate to say that phrase as often as I say it, but I have another illustration of it, an animal version of no good deed goes unpunished.
All right. Sticking up for the animals.
A woman in Ohio saved a boa constrictor, and then things went horribly awry. Listen to the 911 call. Just a quick warning to people who don't like hearing awful things. This is awful. This is a woman who saved a boa constrictor's life. And then you know how moody boa constrictors can be. Boa constrictor turned on her. What?
They don't think about it. They just do what they do.
They're very impulsive, your boa constrictors.
They constrict.
They can. Yes. That's why they're called boa constrictors. All right. Listen to this 911 call from a woman in Ohio who has, as she will point out, a snake on her face.
911, what is the location of your emergency? 911, what is the location of your emergency? Hello?
I had a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Ma'am, you have a what?
Boa constrictor.
You have a boa constrictor stuck to you?
East Lake Road. It's a house. I'm outside with it.
You're outside with a boa constrictor stuck to your face?
Yes.
Okay.
I just rescued it yesterday, please.
You arrested the boa constrictor yesterday?
I rescued it.
Kevin, can you stop right there? It does sound like she said, I arrested a boa constrictor, which is nearly impossible. You have to have so much evidence. You know this, Wendy, if you're going to arrest a boa constrictor. She rescued a boa constrictor, which was a very good deed, but then...
And it's hard to understand. I got to tell you, these 911 operators have a very tough job. You get that call.
Right.
Don't you think it's a prank? Because
I would hope not. You know, if something has reached the level of somebody having to call 911, you would hope, I'm sure they do get their share of pranks, but you would hope the prank would be more inventive than a lady screaming that she had a snake on her face. You would hope, right?
Yeah, I guess that's not very
creative. But she keeps just repeating. She's almost like Bob Newhart. Remember when Bob Newhart would talk on the phone during his stand-up? He would just repeat things.
Right.
And then we would enjoy it. But he didn't do a bit about a lady with a boa on her face.
Oh, a snake on my face.
Right.
It was kind of
right,
muffled.
It was
very difficult to understand.
Because there was a snake on her face. Here's a little more.
You rescued it. Okay, Sam. Okay, ma'am. How old are you?
I'm 45.
Now stop right there, Kevin.
Is that important right
now? I don't think that's the next best question.
I'm hoping against hope, and you know, maybe there's a 911 operator that can call us and let us know at 312-981-7200. I hope she's punching in information and location. Maybe the phone is being pinged.
Right.
Because it seems like, you know, how old are you? What are you wearing? What color hair do you have?
You ever been to Switzerland? If you were on an island, which three albums would you bring?
I know.
Favorite Pop-Tart flavor? I'd be spending my time trying to figure out how to save her life.
Right.
But, you know.
You do have to be able to identify the victim, but here's a clue when you pull up.
It's the lady with the snake on her face.
Right.
Don't be going, that lady looks older than 45. That one looks younger.
Okay, who dropped the dime?
All right, here's a little more of the lady who saved a boa constrictor only to have it attack her.
I'm 45.
All right, stay on the line, please. Ma'am, I've notified the ambulance. Ma'am, I've notified the ambulance and the fire and the police department. So the boa constrictor has a hold of your nose?
Yes.
Can you pry its jaw open if you pinch
no,
its
I'm
jaw?
No, I'm trying. There's blood everywhere.
Okay, and his jaw won't open?
No.
Okay, how big of a snake are we talking, ma'am?
He's like 5.5 feet.
Five and a half feet?
That's way too big.
And you said you rescued it yesterday?
Yes, I rescued Yes.
Okay.
All of my snakes are put away.
What if she said, the other one's attacking my husband? I probably should have mentioned that.
You have 11 snakes?
They're all ball pythons except for these two I rescued.
Okay.
Please.
Ma'am, I have an ambulance. Ma'am, the ambulance and the police are coming. Are you having any difficulty breathing or swallowing? Ma'am, are you having any difficulty breathing or swallowing? Are you having any difficulty breathing or swallowing?
I can't hear you.
Are you having any...
Wait, Kevin, stop it. It almost seems like the 911 operator is put out by this.
No, she's being very patient, and she's trying to remain calm because this woman has a snake on her face.
I think she wants to keep her talking.
Yes.
That's got to be the key in this, right?
Yeah.
Is you want to keep them...
You want to keep them on the line. You want to make sure you're hearing words so you know they're not dead.
Right.
God love her. She rescued all these snakes. I know you're going to say, well, why does she have 11 snakes?
That's 11 too many.
For you, but you know, some people have 11 cats. I mean, she
also
likes snakes.
I bet she doesn't have 11 anymore.
Right. Once your snake attacks you, like
I don't
that,
think you get
you
rid
hold
of
a
it.
You
she
don't?
Has ball pythons. She just rescued the two boas. Maybe she gets rid of the boas, so she's down to 9.
I one time at a Cubs game, Larry Boa attached himself to my face, and I never talked to him again after that. I was done with Larry Boa.
How'd you get him off?
I told him the game was about to start. I go, Larry, this is ridiculous. You got to play shortstop.
Go get your mitt and get out on the field.
Please. What a temper on that
guy. Can we hear the end of this? Because it's bad. Kevin, go. Play.
I can't hear you.
Are you having any difficulty breathing or swallowing?
Yes, I'm on the ground.
Okay, are you having are you having difficulty breathing, ma'am?
No, I'm just scared.
Okay, and do you know if the snake is poisonous?
No, it's not poisonous.
It's not poisonous? Okay, and are you outside or out front?
Oh, God, hurry, please.
Ma'am, the ambulance and the police are coming. Are you outside or out front?
Oh, outside, up front.
I do have to say, here's what works in her advantage, is that she has an incredible knowledge of all things snake. Like, if it were me and that question came up, is it poisonous?
Boas aren't poisonous.
But all I would see was a 5-foot snake on my face. I wouldn't.
Can I tell you, you would never be in this position because you would never go close enough to a snake to have this happen.
No, I would not. And I was thinking, what was happening with that boa that she rescued it? And good for her for being a good Samaritan and rescuing the snake.
Well, someone was probably getting rid of it. So she adopted it. That's what that means.
All right.
My son Dylan rescued two Russian tortoises. Someone wanted to get rid of them. He wanted them. Instead of buying new ones, we adopted them.
All right.
I'm telling him to keep them off his face.
Right.
So far, so good.
No animal should be on your face, right?
No.
Isn't that bad if there's an animal of any kind on your face? Things have gone wrong?
Yeah, sometimes cats...
Yeah, but that's...
Lay on your neck and...
And try to steal your breath. Try to suffocate you.
Shall we finish?
Yeah. I thought that was the end.
You're out in the front? Okay.
Yes.
I don't want you to move, ma'am, okay?
That won't be a problem. Okay. That would not be an issue. Where's she going to go? I'm gonna quickly go to Starbucks. I'll be right back. Stay in the line.
Paul, you're a former 911 operator.
Yeah, how are you folks doing today? So what they're doing is they're building a case. So when she gets off the phone or as she's relaying this information to the computer, the officer then receives that on their computer if she hasn't had a chance to verbally let them know. She'll tell the officer what the computer will say is, we've got a Caucasian 45-year-old female with a snake attached to her face. The snake is not poisonous. She says it's a boa constrictor. She's building it up so that when the officer already approaches a chaotic scene,
they don't have to ask all those questions.
They don't have to ask all these questions, and that's why the operator would have already verified that. Now, as you could tell, you said that, Wendy, that she seems like just put off.
No, Bill said that. I said she
Bill
was
said,
trying
okay.
to be calm and patient and keep the woman calm.
Sometimes Bill sounds like Wendy. I don't realize
the one with the deeper voice is Wendy.
Yes. but it's like if you had someone screaming at you. You can't smack them in the face. You want to tell them, but you can't.
Right.
So they're obviously trying to keep calm and ask the same question over. But that's what they're trying to do is just simply build the case so that the officers, you know what's going on. Now, as you may or may not know, when the fire department got there, the guy took out a pocket knife.
Cut his head off.
Yep.
And she was not happy with that. I think what might have happened was she might have had the snake around her neck, or she might have been looking at it, and the snake might have lunged at her. Typically, the snake will go for something where there's a lot of warmth coming out of, maybe the mouth or maybe the nose, the nostrils. So that's probably how this whole thing happened. But nonetheless, that is what the purpose of the 911 calls go, so they could just build it up so everyone knows what's going on by the time they get there and they can get the
stuff done. So she is punching in that information as she's talking to the woman. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So that's, you know, you got to, when you do the testing on this, you've got, when we did it, we actually had Zeppelin playing in the background at a very loud, you know, some loud music playing.
Why?
To teach you to focus.
I mean, you know, it's like a whole lot of love. No, I got to finish on typing here. You know, I got to finish typing. I got to finish doing my thing and get this out as quick as I can without all that music distracting you.
And there's probably no such thing as too much information, right? You want to get as much information as you can.
The good news is if Robert Plant falls ill while he's on stage when the Zeppelin reunion happens, you'll be good to go.
Well, hey, I'm all set for that. But yeah, it's anytime, and he's getting there too. But that's all it is. It's a very stressful. I'm telling you, it's a very, very stressful.
Sure, I believe it.
But it pays well. And it's got great benefits too. If you could stick around with it.
And we got to run to get to news. But Paul, one final question. Steve Bertrand also mentioned something that I think is important. Yeah. Isn't that the job of a 911 operator to keep the person talking on the phone until help arrives?
Yes, because you don't want That's why she says, "Ma'am." Because you don't want them to pass out. We don't know if she's losing blood. She lost a lot of blood. We don't know that. So you want to keep them talking. And that way, if she stops talking, she immediately relays to the 911 or to the police officer, hey, we've lost contact with the patient. And then they step it up.
Perfect.
So it's a big deal. So that's the rest of the story.
Paul, thank you. We appreciate it. If you need Paul's services, again, his number is 911. It's easy to find. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, guys.
Can we call him even when we're okay?
Yeah, whenever you want. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder here on WGN. And we have a real-life, honest-to-goodness soccer star in our midst. Tony Meola is here from the MLS, which I'm assuming means Major League Soccer.
See, we're off to a good start.
One for one, Tony.
Yeah, we're one for one right now.
One for one.
I got to be honest with you. I am embarrassed that I am not a soccer fan. Soccer is so popular now.
Well, it certainly is. And here in Chicago, it's been sort of a rocky road. It started off so well in 1996 with Major League Soccer here. They won a champion. I'm sorry, 1998. They won a championship. And then the last couple of years, it's not been their best teams, to say the least. And they've done a great job of getting now to the top of the Eastern Conference and a team that could win Major League Soccer. And, of course, the opportunity here to host this MLS All-Star game and bring Real Madrid, the top club team in the world, to come in here. There's a guy probably you've seen before, Cristiano Ronaldo, who won't be here tonight, but tomorrow night, that is part of this team. It's a great honor for these guys to get on the field and try and compete.
Why isn't Ronaldo a part of the All-Star game?
Well, yeah, so he had the Confederations Cup with Portugal, there's a certain amount of time that they've got to give them off, and I think it's 30 days, and he's coming up to the end of that, and he's had some other issues the last couple days in Spain that he's had to deal with.
Can you elaborate a little bit?
He's had some tax issues.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
And of course, so I think they've sorted that out, but
you know what? When he hired Willie Nelson to be his accountant, I said to myself, this is not going to end well.
Bad move.
This will not play out well.
All right, so you mentioned the MLS All-Star match. It's happening at Soldier Field. It's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Where do we go for tickets? What can we expect? What's happening here?
Where do you go for tickets? I would imagine online you go. I this thing's going to be sold out by kickoff. There's no doubt. And you bring the top team in the world into a city like this that has such a rich history in the game. There's no doubt that it'll be a sellout. And it should be a great atmosphere. Look, all-star games are what they are, right?
Yeah.
It's not nearly as intense. And we see this in other sports. And it's not an awful lot of defending going on. So as a goalkeeper, I used to hate all-star games. You know, it's like, oh, you got picked for the all-star game.
Right.
Oh, great. You know, but it's an honor. There's no doubt. But it should be a fun night. It should be an exciting night for the fans. And you'll get to see some really good soccer, I would imagine.
Ticketmaster.com, by the way.
That's who's got your tickets. Ticketmaster.com.
Imagine that.
Tony, over the last couple of years, I've been fortunate. I've taken some exotic trips to Costa Rica, to Mexico, a couple other places.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that 24 hours a day, if you're out, there's a soccer match from somewhere around the world, and people are going nuts watching it.
And you can't go a commercial break on TV, and you can't go anywhere. You can't go in a grocery store and not see it. It really is amazing, and in a lot of ways, and maybe it's unfortunate in a lot of countries, it's really the heartbeat of the country, isn't it? And, and as their national team goes, it seems like, and especially around World Cup, as your national team goes, seems like that's how your economy goes in the country, and We're not at that point. I don't know if we want to get to that point, to be quite honest, but we're at a point where we continue to grow, and the fact that we could even conceive in 1996 that they're selling MLS expansion franchises at $150 million a franchise right now, and talk of going to $200 million right now, and cities fighting over it. So in December, they'll announce two more cities in Major League Soccer that will come in, I believe, in 2019. And there are 12 cities vying for two spots right now.
Elmhurst, which is one of our western suburbs. We're hopeful.
Is that north, south? Where is that? You've got to help
west.
Me out here. That's a
little
west.
Just a little west,
okay.
But we're very hopeful. Now, these little towns, when I would travel, every town, no matter how small the town, they'd all have a church that they were very proud of, and they'd all have a soccer field. That was a given in the smallest of towns.
Yeah, no, I believe it. I've seen it. I've lived it. And we used to do preseason quite a bit in Central America and really – it's neat to engulf yourself in that for a while, you know, I don't know that we want our economy to run always as your local team runs, but there's no doubt that we're getting to that, and we're seeing that, and just looking outside the window here, and they're setting up, it looks like an activation here, so to have this stuff happen in 1996, we couldn't dream of this stuff, you know, and to see it grow is really neat.
All right. I was telling you off the air, we played soccer in junior high school where we had to wear the pennies. Remember those to be on your team? It was just like a little chef apron kind of thing. Soccer has completely exploded.
We still wear pennies, by the way.
Do you really?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, I thought you would have gotten something cooler than that.
No, they're pennies.
Okay.
So it's essentially, as Wendy said, is it an apron?
Well,
what
it's
is
probably
it?
A pullover
yeah,
now,
it's
right?
A pullover, yeah. It's just,
we used to have to tie them on the side. It was not fun.
Just easy during training to have two colors, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the AYSO league has been really good for when your kids want to start some kind of sport. It's great to get them in to learn how to play as a team. So that is, soccer has really exploded. How old were you when you first started playing soccer?
Yeah, right from the, I'm first generation here in the U.S. So my mom and dad didn't grow up here. They came to America. They were 18 years old. All my dad knew was soccer. He came from Italy. He played. I feel like I didn't have much of a choice at the time, you know, because that's, you know, the game was growing. I was in an area where the New York Cosmos, where Pelé played, was only 3 miles from my house. So, you know, my dad, obviously, we gravitated towards that. And, you know, lucky enough that things took off. But I was like every other young kid now, 6 years old. That's all I thought about doing. And, you know, also played other sports and went to college and played two sports in college. But my love was soccer. This is all I wanted to do.
There was a belief for a while that in Europe, they're much more patient. So if a game ends, after you've been watching a match and it's 1-0, they're fine with that in Europe. But in the United States, we want more scoring. Is that true or not true?
Yeah, I think I'm feeling like we've gotten past that a little bit, only because the fan has gotten a little more educated, where a 1-0 game, a draw, a 0-0 draw, 1-1 draw can be as exciting as a 3-0 game. And quite honestly, a lot of these 3- and 4-0, you know, 4-1 games are not all that exciting, right, because it's so lopsided. So I think as we've gotten educated as a fan, we've come to appreciate it. Certainly as players, we appreciate it, right, because, you know, the effort that gets put into a particular game and something might go wrong where you're just happy enough as a team to survive the result.
Right.
But I think our fans now have gotten to the point where we're educated enough to understand that's also a beautiful game, but in a different way.
Yeah. All right. Tony Miola is with us, MLS soccer star champion, and John has a comment for you. John, you'd like to talk to Tony?
Yeah, hi, Tony.
Hey, John.
This guy you're talking to almost single-handedly beat the Chicago Fire in the MLS championship game.
I had some teammates with me to do that, by the way.
But you
stopped every shot.
Some unbelievable saves to win that game. I think it was 2005, or when was that?
That would make me younger, but it was 2000, unfortunately. It was a long time, it was a long time ago. Yeah, no, I remember that fondly, and you know, Chicago. I think that particular year it was us in Chicago at the top, pretty much the entire season, and that championship that was played in D.C. was going to come down to our two teams, and on that day we were fortunate. You talk about a great 1-0 game, an exciting 1-0 game. That was about as an exciting a final as we've had up until probably last year.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, there were a lot of shots on goal. I mean, you unbelievable how many great saves you made. But, I traveled to D.C. to watch that. I'm a Fire fan, of course. But, I traveled to D.C. with a bunch of friends to watch that game. Great to hear from you. I'm going to be at the game.
Great.
Tomorrow night, Soldier Field. Perfect.
Thanks, John.
Thank you for calling. Did you have the kick-ass mullet back then?
Oh, boy, did you.
No, I don't think so. No, the mullet was before. I think I had to cut the mullet to win the championship. I think that was the deal. It wasn't a championship cut. You know, I hate the internet. I have three kids. One's 20, my daughter's 17, and my youngest, who is he's a really good kid, but with me, he's a wise guy, you know, so he loves Google, and he loves the hairstyles, and when he gets mad, he'll just text me one of those mullet hairstyles, because he knows it really ticks me off, but so I hate the internet for that.
I got to tell you, I'm not slamming you. I loved the mullet. I married
a guy with the mullet. Was in back
then. Oh, I loved
then.
It.
Yeah, now, hockey players had it.
But Tony, you'll notice when he said loved. Like it was past
tense.
No,
I would
current.
Like my husband to grow his mullet
current.
Back. No, all the hockey players have them now.
I'm not sure my wife would recommend the mullet coming back.
Are you a great foosball player?
An okay one.
Just an okay one?
Yeah, just an okay one.
Yeah.
It's like guitar players doesn't necessarily mean they're good at Guitar Hero. Yeah. You know what I mean? Playing it is different than foosball.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Who's the best player you ever either played against or saw play?
Oh, boy. It's funny. I had this question the other day. It was Marco von Basten. We actually played AC Milan right here in Chicago at Soldier Field.
Yeah.
And at the end of the game, I mean, it was clear to me why he was at that point recognized. Unfortunately, his career ended a little bit early because of
injury.
Knees. His knees were really bad. And he went on. He played for Holland at the time, now the Netherlands. Was an outstanding national team player, but played at AC Milan, made his name, was a young Ajax player who's one of the biggest youth clubs or developers of young players in the world still today. Guys on the national team had the opportunity, a young Landon Donovan in that 2002 World Cup. We got to see him mature. Claudio Reyna, who was the captain of that team, now at NYCFC as one of their sporting directors. So we've had some great players, but I go to Marco van Basten in one game I played here in Chicago, of all places.
He's very fast, wasn't he?
Yeah,
very
he was fast. And big and strong and just had a nose for goal.
Yeah.
Tony Miola's with us. We're talking soccer. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to find out how Allstate is involved in this and find out how you kind of gave back to the Chicago community to help youth soccer. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Everybody now, it's Bill and Wendy and MLS All-Star match at Soldier Field. Tomorrow night, it appears to be in the sold-out phase, so if you go to Ticketmaster, you may not find your tickets. We have soccer star Tony Miola in the studio. You did some work, even though you got rid of the Chicago Fire back in 2000, you came back to help Chicago and worked on a soccer field.
Yeah, so for the last 5 years, I've been traveling around the country with Allstate, and part of the program we did last night at Farragut Academy High School. We went and refurbished the field, and this is what we do. We go into the communities, we refurbish the field, give them new goals, new bleachers, equipment, uniforms, soccer balls. Essentially, it's a new start for these communities in soccer, and we're trying to give them a safe environment to play in, and an environment where they can enjoy the game and not have to worry about not having enough soccer balls or not having uniforms to play on the weekend. And it's probably from a person who has gotten so much out of the game over the last, you know, over the 20-year career that I had. It's an opportunity now for me to give something back to the game. So it's such a neat, neat project that we do. And obviously, we this is home for Allstate, as you guys know here.
Yeah.
And it was important for them to use this week in order to facilitate this project here in Chicago. And it's they really, really do a great job. I probably undersold it a little bit, how well they really do and what a great job they do. But credit to the people at Allstate, because as you guys know, it's not easy from a sponsorship standpoint to put that much as far as resources into something. Mm-hmm. And they view soccer as the vehicle to get into the community and give back.
Did you say you have a radio show?
I do. I work on Sirius every day. We've got the Drive Time show, well, I guess here in Chicago, be 4 to 6. We have a lot of Chicago listeners at that time.
Music, all
soccer
themes?
Oh, no, just
themes.
All soccer all day. Yeah, no. No music. We request music in and out of the breaks, but that's about it. And by the way, people complain about our music all the time.
What?
I'm still
Why?
A rock guy from the 80s, you know. And
so what would you play if you could have music more on the show? What would
More AC/DC, yeah. Guns N' Roses. I'll go Jersey guy, got to go Bruce and Bon Jovi, you know, those. Yeah. But yeah.
Have you met Bruce or Bon Jovi?
I have met Bruce. I've not met John Bon Jovi.
God, was it all you thought it would be and more when you
He's
get to
meet him? He's a small guy.
Yeah.
He's small. Yeah, a lot smaller than I thought.
Yep.
We'll tell him you said that.
I think I told him. I said he's a lot
Hi, little fella.
Shorter than I thought.
And he still took a picture with you?
Yeah.
On your shoulders?
I was cool with the mullet, you know?
Right.
I was.
You can hide in there. It's a good time. A friend of mine goes to see soccer matches in Europe, and he told me this story. Tell me if this is true or not. The fans are so fervent, the soccer fans in Europe, that if you're a fan of the visiting team, you have to come in through a special entrance.
That's right.
And you're only allowed to sit in a designated area.
You've got to come in an hour before the game, generally, and then you leave an hour after the game.
Yeah.
So you have fun if you win, right, because it's a lot of taunting going on after the game for an hour, but it sucks if you lose. Yeah, so that's pretty typical, and unfortunately, that's how they have to do it.
Wow.
Yeah, we don't have that problem here in the U.S. One, I don't think... I think fans here are generally a little calmer about that stuff. Plus, the travel, the distance between teams, you don't often get a huge crowd from the... You know, you got L.A. playing New York. How many people go? We're doing mm-hmm. a better job with it, and mm-hmm. it really creates a nice atmosphere. But it's more in the conferences that we're seeing it now rather than... You see Portland, Seattle, mm-hmm. Vancouver, L.A. against San Jose. You'll get a lot of those things. Now in New York, we've got two teams now. Always a huge rivalry with D.C. Now D.C. and Philly are so close, so we're getting more of it. Luckily, we haven't had any of those instances in our that we've had to deal with that have been bad.
I know you're from New Jersey. If I'm at a match in New Jersey and I see Chris Christie at the match, am I allowed to yell anything at him?
Only if he has nachos. You're allowed to yell at him because then he'll come back at you, apparently.
Although he's kind of apologizing a little bit about that today.
Yeah.
The nachos or what?
No,
he
not
said?
The nachos. Okay. About what he okay. said.
Not the nachos.
You shouldn't apologize for nachos. All right. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you,
hey,
Tony
my
Miola.
Pleasure.
He will be at the MLS All-Star Match at Soldier Field. It's happening tomorrow night. Sold-out crowd. You're doing a little autograph photo session
beforehand?
Yeah, we'll
do a meet and greet from 5 to 7, and we'll go enjoy a game after that.
Perfect. Good luck to you.
Good. Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Grow the mullet back. Come on.
Special request. Thanks, Tony. We'll take a quick break, some news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We threw things off because we were a little early with the news, so Steve Bertrand had to grab it, and maybe Adam Chappelle was not ready. We're never early. We're usually late.
Right.
So that's what's going on.
Right.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And
I sent a fruit basket to Adam Chappelle with some tangerines and some Tangelos. I hope he's happy.
Can I just say, a lot of times when you get a fruit basket, it's not the fruit you like.
No. It's the gesture.
Yeah, I don't want the gesture. I want the good fruit. I want the berries, peaches, nectarines, maybe pineapple, but it's like apples and oranges and... Boring fruit baskets.
Right.
We need to change that.
I know that that's directed straight to me.
No, no. Billy's Baskets.
I'll get you a mango and some grapefruit.
Yeah.
You'll be happy.
All
Everything's
right.
fine.
It's the first right. Tuesday of the month, isn't it?
Yeah, and that means Mike McNamara is here. Hello, Mike.
Hi. I do not have a fruit basket at all.
We should start demanding that from all our guests.
Very
good
fruits.
Disappointing. Berries only.
They don't hold up. Those don't hold up.
I know.
Right? That's why we need the oranges and the apples and the things that you don't like to eat. Because,
the
you know, they're like canned fruit.
Very rarely hold up from the store to your refrigerator.
True or not,
it's
that's
like
right.
if you don't get home and eat them,
right.
there's a big mold ball in the middle of it.
Right.
I'm going to start my kind of basket.
Where do you go to get your groceries?
Organic.
It's 10 minutes till mold ball.
The dollar store by Wendy also has a fruit department.
Hey, don't laugh. They have steaks. Have you seen the
at
signs?
The dollar store?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, don't get steaks
there
from the dollar store.
I didn't, and I. But I'm sure some people do. I saw a sign. Oh,
I wouldn't get meat or contraception from a dollar store. Those would be the two things that I would say this is really not in anyone's best interest.
Both meat related.
Yeah, I guess
sage,
so.
Sage advice from Bill.
Solid advice.
Today.
Thanks, Mike. Mike, you have an interesting little predicament for tonight's show.
Predicament.
Yeah,
we are sold out.
Sold out.
We
what?
Are sold out.
That's right.
And we pack the house every month, but tonight is we've been sold out since yesterday and just jam packed. It's one of our biggest nights of the year, and I will say to the listeners that are thinking, oh, well, I wanted to come tonight, message us on Facebook, Midwest Independent Film Festival.
There's a waiting
list
we'll
get
of some
on, we'll
sort.
Get you on the wait list.
Okay, good.
It's just we're at capacity, but, you know, it's nice out. There's a Cubs game up the street, et cetera.
Right.
You know, some seats might come available, but as of right now, we're not selling any more tickets. Message us on Facebook. We'll get you on there.
There's a good reason that tonight's show is sold out.
Tonight is our annual Female Filmmakers Night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a night of films.
Good.
There we go. Thank you, Wendy,
for the
applause. And this is a night of films that is solely dedicated to films directed by women made in Chicago in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very specific, and it's a spotlight on some directors that, you know, people might not have heard of and might not know about.
Yes.
And also, it's just hands down an incredible night of films.
Good.
You know, it isn't something like, well, now we're going to have some, you know, these are, I would put this lineup of short films up against any other short film program at any other film festival in the country.
Nice. You have brought...
And I brought a couple fine folks with me that will be premiering their films with us tonight. We have Kendall Goldberg, who has a short film called When Jeff Tried to Save the World, and also Wendy Jo Carlton, whose short film Sister Jesus makes its premiere tonight.
Congratulations, both
Thank
of you.
Thank you much.
Many times on the show, Wendy and I have talked about this topic, that there needs to be more women involved in film and directing, producing you across the board. What was it about the world of film that both of you said, I want in on this?
Should I go?
Sure.
Wendy Jo first?
Because I'm older.
I thought youngest goes first.
Well, you know, I was always obsessed with media and recording things and documenting things. So as a little girl, I already was the kid with a tape recorder from Radio Shack, and the Radio Shack store was my favorite store. So that just kind of led to...
either a radio career or a director.
I did start in radio,
did
actually.
You?
Yeah. And
I liked I spent time
Michigan.
At my Radio Shack, too.
I know, right? It's like, huh, boy, that microphone might make me have better ideas.
Right.
It's so sexy. So yeah, that's kind of my background. I think that was inspired. In fact, this maybe connects with Sister Jesus. I'll try to be quick. Is that growing up Catholic, I was obsessed with the microphone when the priest put it on.
A little clip
sound,
on
the
lanyard.
Sound, exactly.
Yep.
The little click on and all the speakers weren't. It just really felt important.
The voice of
important.
God.
Exactly. And I think that extended. So, you know, fast forward now, 2017, tonight, Chicago premiere of Sister Jesus. It's a 4.5-minute film about an 8-year-old girl who faints in first grade, and how her sister Pauline kind of, she starts to look at her a little differently or notice her because she feels noticed by her in that kind of adult essence way of like, oh, this person understands me, that she's being kind to me. So it's a good nun story.
Oh. All right, there are a few out there. I didn't go to Catholic school. I know you did.
Yeah.
You didn't have a lot of problems with nuns, did you?
Not a lot. The occasional.
My husband did.
But it can inspire, if you're a storyteller, attending a Catholic school for any length of time will inspire a story or two, won't it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, there's so much iconography and imagery, repetition, routines that are actually good,
yeah.
give you structure.
Structure. God, I hate that word. I'm not one for structure. I got to be honest.
Maybe
with
radio
you.
Isn't the best place for you.
Nah. We don't have structure. No.
All right, there we go.
All right. Well, that sounds good. You hear 4.5 minutes. How much work went into it? Quite a lot.
Quite a lot. I was inspired by a friend in Washington who said he was film festival director in Washington. He reached out to me because he knew my work and said, I want to give you a challenge, write something about First Crush, because he was putting things together. This is the story that came to my mind. It's based on my own first grade experience, and then I fictionalized it a little bit.
Pretty cool.
How different is the finished product from what your first germ of a dream was? Is it kind of similar, or is it extremely different?
It's pretty close to what I pictured. Yeah, I wrote the short story first, got some feedback from my writer group friends, and then just realized with very little time, very little budget for this at all, that I was going to shoot it myself and then, you know, cast it here. There's two Chicago actresses in it, playing the nun and the young girl. So it's pretty close.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It must feel really good to see the finished product.
Oh, yeah.
It does, right?
And it feels really good to see it in a packed house.
Yeah. Packed house. That's the key. That's one of the main things with the Midwest Independent Film Festival. Early on when we started, you know, when I'm not running the fest, I'm an actor, and I came up through Storefront Theater. We had those nights where, you know, there's six in the cast and five in the audience, and we had to cancel the show. And when we started this festival, you just said, hey, if we're not going to pack this house, we're not doing it. We have to be dedicated to jam-packing the house. And 13 years later, you know, here we are. And there's just – this is why more people need to go see films in the theater, because you can't replace – 300 people in the theater all together enjoying
makes
a film
a big
together.
Difference.
It's a different
and
viewing experience.
It is.
And especially a comedy like Kendall's right here called When Jeff Tried to Save the World. It's got John Heder of Napoleon Dynamite fame, Jim O'Hare from Parks and Recreation, and this amazing 22-year-old filmmaker is going to maybe tell you all about it.
How'd you jump in, Kendall? What happened?
You know, my story is like similar to yours. It was just kind of like I never really thought about doing anything else.
Yeah.
I was handed a camera at a young age and then just kept using it and kept bossing people around when my we just watched like home videos the other day, and there's a video of like my dad filming, and I, you know, was telling him where to zoom in on and where to, you know, and then I eventually
just bossy pants
taking it from him, and so it was just something I always did, and that's how I got into it. Never thought about doing anything else. My film, When Jeff Tried to Save the World, it's a short film, a little longer than I had intended, but it's a proof of concept for a feature. It started out as a feature script, and when we couldn't get the money to make the feature when we wanted to, you know, I'd heard and seen examples, you know, very successful ones like Whiplash, where it was made into a short first and then they got the financing to do the feature. So we tried that, and it worked, and we're going to be shooting the feature in two weeks.
That's outstanding.
I got goosebumps when you said
that's
that.
That's the perfect
that's
story.
Awesome.
Yeah. So,
Wow.
In 2 weeks, like, what is she doing here?
What's the synopsis?
It's called When Jeff Tried to Save the World. It follows Jeff, which is played by John Heder.
Mm-hmm.
He's the manager of a bowling alley. And he sort of ventures on this trip of self-discovery as he tries to save the place from going out of business. It's become his second home, and, you know, he loves working there, and it helps him sort of cope with the anxiety issues that he has outside of his life, his day-to-day routine. And when he discovers that it's being sold by the original owner, he tries to save it.
Yeah. Was there ever a moment where you were a little overwhelmed by the star power? You're working with John Heder, who had such a hit with Napoleon Dynamite. Jim O'Hare, I've known for years. I love that guy. But were you ever like, well, look at what's happening. I'm working with these guys all of a sudden.
Actually, no.
Never.
There have been a couple times where I've been starstruck, but not by them. And the reason is it's not because they're, you know, any less than other people. It's just because that they're so amazingly friendly and down to earth, and they made me feel, especially John, like he really made me feel like I was not, because we shot the short, I started talking to him when I was 20, and we shot the short when I was 21, and now we're doing the feature and I'm 22. So yeah, it's an age difference, and as much as I want to say it doesn't make a difference, it sometimes does. But when you find those people like John and Jim and the rest of my cast who really, like, I gained their trust, they really looked up to me and I looked up to them in an equal amount, and, you know, we respected each other. They just made me feel really comfortable. Like, I mean, after the night, and we shot near where my parents live, and every night after we shot, they would John would be like, hey, can we go back to your house and play video games?
And, like, awesome.
Jim O'Hara came over to roast s'mores and make pizza. So, like, it just,
so you became friends. It wasn't just, like, so. actors working in your movie.
Yeah, and I was shocked that it was that way, but I guess it's just because
there's
were, like,
similar
cool
stories
people.
About Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor after Cleopatra. Sure. They would all go back to his house and play Q-Bert.
Yeah, those are great stories.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You talk about budgets with these movies, and I know that there are a lot of people that have state-of-the-art cameras, but there are a lot of people shooting movies on an iPhone. Did you both have really wonderful equipment, or did iPhones help you out?
Well, both of our projects are very different for this screening. I will say that normally I shoot, you know, HD with expensive equipment and people who are very awesome who are part of the crew. For Sister Jesus, I use this iPhone.
See,
I'm showing
that blows
you right
my
now.
Mind.
Oh, how fun!
And you could edit if you wanted to. You could edit on a computer that's about that size as well.
You could edit
yeah,
on
but
the phone.
It's hard.
Yeah, you could.
You could edit on the phone, which I tried to do. No, yeah. The interface. Your fingers are too big. You can't move it how you want to move it. So
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say then I just transferred to Final Cut and edited there.
Is there any desire for either of you to ever work with like 16mm film, or is digital the way to play?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's just like as a filmmaker, inherently you wanna have that like old feeling of working on film and I mean, if you went and saw Dunkirk in 70mm, like it's just like there's nothing seeing a film on film, right?
Yeah.
It's called a film for a reason. But yeah. I know it to be very true, and I'm sure you do too, that you can't always do that, and nor can you afford it. I mean, I went to school, and they offered a couple of options to shoot on film, but it just wasn't really realistic with our budget. So that being said, I'm never one to be like, oh, we have to shoot on film or we can't shoot the film. You just have to make the movie, you know,
right.
Do what you can to get it done. I think that's more important. The story matters the most, but shooting on film that's amazing.
Yeah, it's always a budget thing, but I have shot on 16
you have
and 35. It's just for short pieces.
It's interesting you mentioned Dunkirk on 70mm. There's not even a theater in the Chicagoland area that handles 70mm film.
Not one?
No.
Well, didn't the Music Box?
Yeah.
I think they did.
Oh,
yeah.
Did they pull it off?
Not to...
Let's get them
I'm
on the
sorry.
Line.
I hope you're right.
It was a special event. It was a special event.
I don't think
so
they normally do it.
Right.
Oh,
it was like one night only.
Camera?
Right.
Oh, excellent. Good.
So, yeah, local. But there isn't a theater that does that regularly for sure.
Because
yeah,
when
they
first
did,
announced this in 70, they said the sadness of this is, as great as it is to see it on 70, you won't be able to.
Right.
So I'm glad if Music Box stepped
one
up.
One night only. Yeah.
Can I ask you a moviegoer novice question?
Yeah.
What will I see that's different?
There's a lot more crispness, a lot more lines of resolution, a lot more frames. It's a much clearer, more succinct, perfect picture than there would be if it was downgraded a little bit.
It's all also right. Just like a feeling, not to sound pretentious, but it's just a feeling. When you see a movie, especially in IMAX, like that film, 70mm IMAX, you're just like, you feel in it. You feel in the film. So.
That's the only way I'd see the Emoji Movie was in 70mm. I refuse to see it in any other.
So I guess you're not going to see it because they're not screening it in
70mm. No. They're lucky they're doing it in 3mm.
Sad face emoji right now say that.
Everyone's I like my emojis tiny. Like
yeah, that's the way God intended. All right, we'll take a quick break.
God didn't use emojis.
Yes, he did.
How do you know?
I'm sure he did. Of course he did. We'll take a quick break and then more of this sort of behavior. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Mike McNamara is here from the Chicago Independent Film Festival, along with Kendall Goldberg and Wendy Jo Carlton, two female filmmakers. And the reason I say that, normally I wouldn't even throw that in, but tonight is a very special night for the film festival. Yep. It's all women directors.
All women directors. All films made in Chicago and the Midwest, all films directed by women. So it's a very special night. And I have to say, because I know that's more in the headlines now, trending on Twitter, and it's in Academy Award acceptance speeches now. It's very much at the front of the news. We've been doing female filmmakers nights for the past 10 years. Our first one was nine, 10 years ago. And people said, oh, well, how are you even going to pull that up? What you're, you know, they thought we were crazy to put something like that. How does that even happen? And so it's great to see. And it was pretty tough, I'll be honest, to put that first program together 10 years ago. Now we have, plenty, you know, films for three programs.
Patty Jenkins made Wonder Woman, which made an insane amount of money. Catherine Bigelow has Dunkirk, which is probably going to be the biggest movie of the year. It's a pretty good time to be a woman filmmaker.
Christopher Nolan made Dunkirk, but Catherine Bigelow, I think, made
Detroit,
which is probably going to win
right,
a bunch of awards.
I've
corrected you twice in one show,
I love this day.
I looked at Wendy Jo real quick, and I was like, I don't think.
We were both wondering, wait,
we were on that
so.
70mm binge, but yes,
if,
these are.
If I can win you back over, Nolan's mother is a woman.
All right.
Do you see how he does it?
No, it's true.
I can't stay mad at him.
I Googled it.
So, yes, but yes.
Go through the other films.
And these are trailblazers that are, you know, hopefully, you know, Patty Jenkins, Bigelow are kind of paving the way. At the end of the day, is the film good or not?
I promise you,
there's a lot of films I could show you. Honestly, we're going to show you a film tonight. It was a music video for an L.A. rap artist named Butch Cassidy that was shot out west and is just total R&B rap groove. And if I showed you a lineup of the 10 people and said, who directed this, you would not guess that it is Leo Burnett's vice president of global affairs, Kathy Petrouskis, who's actually at work down the street right now. Do you know what I mean? But you know, is the music video good or not? It's a great. That's really all that matters.
Yeah.
A couple other ones that we have the Midwest Festival premiere of a film called Tanya, which is the directorial debut for Monica Raymond, who is who everyone knows much better as one of the stars of NBC's Chicago Fire.
Yeah.
It's got a bunch of her cast in there with her as well. Very powerful piece. And then got a great music video called Wanting You that's from a St. Louis filmmaker named Mia Janae Watkins. We've got some wonderful animated shorts, Lingua Absentia. And it's a jam-packed night, comedy, drama, animated, low production value, high production value. You're going to see all of it. And at the end of the day, you're just going to say, wow, that was an amazing night of shorts. And then, you know, also, fortunately, you know, we put a spotlight on women that are doing a great job in the director's chair.
Everybody we talk to off the air says, Mike McNamara, we couldn't have done this without you. And you really have done a pretty amazing job getting this all together.
You say it sometimes, Mike. I've heard you say that. Where would we be without me?
He says it off the air, yeah.
I have a T-shirt. Right. That's
right, with your picture on the front.
You took a big risk, and it paid off bigly.
It was back and forth. You know, we kind of leaned on each. We took a risk on each other when we started this 14 years ago. Everyone said, "What are me and my co-founder Mike Quilford, who's a great cinematographer here in town?" People said, "What do you mean you're only going to show films that are Chicago and the Midwest? Mm-hmm. How are you even going to have any films?" Mm-hmm. And at the time, we kind of looked at each other and said, "Maybe we are crazy. Maybe we are going to really go broke, really, really." You know, we were already maxing out our credit cards just to be able to rent the theater and put up a website and get an office and stuff. And you know, we scraped and clawed, and great films came along. And as you know, over the last 14 years, now the filmmaking community has blossomed in Chicago and all over the Midwest. And you know, here we are, and we've got awesome filmmakers here. I love that we have Kendall's film, this short film, and then in 2 weeks the feature starts shooting.
That's amazing.
It's what it's all about.
Can I put a shout out so that you don't have to? Mike is so supportive to area filmmakers. He's been very directly supportive to me personally. In fact, he sent me someone who could play in Sister Jesus. I didn't go with her, but he stepped up. He's like, "What do you need? What do you need?" He's always that person. What do you need? And I love that.
That's perfect.
And I want to add, Mike is in my film.
Oh, he is. Yeah. Oh,
I think for a second, I said that's right.
A nude
You'll
scene.
Have to come
I'm
on.
The nude bowler 3.
Of course you are.
Oh, there's more than one. Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
I have a
Don't drop
cameo.
Your ball.
Yes.
Do you
bada bing.
Now, what if somebody listening has made a film, and do they reach out to you? Do you reach out to them? How does this work?
Great question. If you're based in Chicago or the Midwest and you've made a film, just go to midwestfilm.com. You can it'll direct you right through. You'll submit your film right through our site, midwestfilm.com, and we would love to see it. And we hope you'll follow us through, you know, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff. And we hope to see you tonight. We are sold out for tonight, but if you message us on Facebook, we'll get you on the wait list and do our best to get you in.
Let's say everything goes according to plan. Kendall, what are you doing in 5 years?
Oh, this is good.
Hopefully making another movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
in
that's
70,
ideal, right?
No.
Yeah.
70mm.
Where it can be shown in theaters all around the Chicagoland
right,
area
right,
in
right.
5 years.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I mean, just the ideal plan would be just keep making movies.
Good, good. Wendy, just same question. In 5 years, everything's
5 years?
Yeah.
Ooh, I have a hard time with time. I can't see past the 6 months, and that's how I kind of get through life. 5 years, probably the same thing. I've been making films since 19... 88.
Yeah.
So I've got like, you know, 20 shorts, and I've directed two features, Hannah Free and Jamie and Jess.
Hannah Free, which you showed at the fest. She had a web series called Easy Abby, which garnered more than 30 million views on YouTube.
Awesome.
So this is real deal
stuff.
Think
about that number for a second. Your work was seen by 30 million people.
Million.
Or one guy that just loved
40,
it.
40 million at this point. And I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to pay my rent. So it tells
isn't
you a little
that
bit
a
about
sad
the,
twist
that
to
is
that?
Sad.
The scale is, it's, but that's a different, you know, conversation.
But it's one of those things where you say to yourself, but if the right person sees it, if the head of some film conglomerate sees it and goes, that we need more of that, then you're on Easy Street.
Yep.
Yeah. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Easy never on Easy Street. You can never say that any
where
filmmakers
is easy
on Easy Street.
Street. I can, it's but not on my Google Maps.
Yeah, that's a tough one to GPS.
Good luck. Congrats. Thank you very
much.
Thank
you so much. We'll see you tonight, Landmark Century Center Cinema, 6 p.m. And come on out.
Thanks, all of you.
Thank you.
Really
so
appreciate
much.
It. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up. And then a game where you can win Madagascar tickets. The hit Broadway musical is coming to Chicago. We'll explain more next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I know I'm supposed to stop, but this is just such a happy song. I don't want to stop it.
Who is this?
Kevin, who sings this?
It's originally done by
Tears for Fears,
but this is covered by Gary Jules.
Was it Tears for Fears originally? I couldn't remember.
Shout, Shout, and it's, Mad World.
Oh, what a sad song this is. And if you ever wanted the saddest day ever, have Lana Del Rey sing this song, because you would just burst into tears.
I'll have her at your funeral.
All right, promise? You promise?
No.
I would love that. We have some incredible tickets to give away.
Can I tell you what they are? Not just one or two. It's a four-pack of tickets. Here's what we have right here, right now. Four tickets to the family musical Madagascar. I've seen a lot of people posting on Facebook that they've taken their family.
Mm-hmm.
Ear-to-ear smiles, can I just tell you?
Mm-hmm.
It's live on stage. It's happening through August 27th over at Navy Pier, the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. And with these particular tickets, the four-pack for the family, you'll meet the cast for autographs and photos. You can get your tickets, if you're listening, at chicagoshakes.com. Or how do you want to work this?
Well, let's get two people to square off. I've written a game called Are You Mad? You know, because of Madagascar. So you want to give us a call right now. Don't waste any time. Get to your phone. Dial recklessly. 312-981-7200. Call those numbers in that particular order. 312-981-7200. We will have two of you square off against each other. The winner will get the four tickets to Madagascar, and the loser must leave town and never return.
Did you say what number, callers?
I'm going to leave that up to you.
Three and four. Kevin
very
just gave
fair.
Me a thumbs up because he doesn't have to go through a lot of people. I want to give you a compliment because with all these games coming back, like Match Game and Tattletales.
Yeah.
That's not coming back, is it?
You never know, Wendy.
You should be hosting a game show.
Steve Harvey won't allow it. Steve Harvey said, I get to host every game show. No one else can. Just me, Steve Harvey. That's it.
He's only funny because of what the guests say.
And then
you know,
he reacts. That's it.
That's what
he's
you
shocked.
Know, and he's good at that. But you have the material.
Oh.
I'm telling you, you do such a great job, and it's
you're
been way
nice.
Too long since we played a game on this show.
Thank you. That's very nice of you.
I know all the work lies on your shoulders for this, but you do
well
a great job.
It. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, shall we meet our contestants?
Let's meet them individually. So much easier.
All right, Rick has called us, and Rick, where are you from?
I'm in Skokie.
Rick, have you ever won anything on a game show before? Uh-oh.
No, but no? I did win something at Wrigley Field on Fan Appreciation Day about 30 years ago.
I think you're fine. As long as it was 30 years ago, I think you're okay. We can still allow this.
All right. Would you like to meet your contestant? Or your challenger, I should say?
Sure.
Hey, Vito, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Vito, how are you?
I am doing awesome. How are you?
Very good. Tell us some...
Vito, I'm Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What a friendly... Okay. You don't usually see this with contestants,
no.
Wendy, but Rick is reaching out to Vito. I love this.
Vito, where are you from?
Lockport.
Awesome.
Very, very nice. Rick, Vito, I will explain to you the rules. There aren't many. It's a very, very simple game. Because the tickets are to see Madagascar, the game is called Are You Mad? There are 10 questions. Each of them has the answer that starts with the word mad, M-A-D. That's all you need to know. I will throw out a question, and when you know the answer, Rick shout out your name, Rick. Vito shout out your name, Vito. Whoever's first gets the first crack at it. The questions...
Bill, I'm mad as hell, and I can't take it
anymore. I love... Rick, I'm giving you an extra point for pulling out a network reference. So, Rick, you already lead 1-0. The first question is worth 100 points. The second is worth 200 and will go all the way up to 1,000. So, again, all you need to do when you think you know the answer is shout out your name. Rick, let me hear how your buzzer will sound.
Rick.
Perfect. Vito, and yours sounds like?
Vito.
Couldn't be better. All right, guys, are you both ready? Any questions?
No questions.
All right. Like I said, it's the Are You Mad game. Every answer will start with those letters, M-A-D, mad. Question number one is worth 100 points. Good luck, fellas. Here it is. Question one. This odd acquaintance of Alice in Wonderland was voiced by Ed Wynn in the... Ooh, Wendy.
I think I heard Rick first. I heard the rrr coming out.
Very close, very close.
It was close.
Rick, go ahead. What is your answer?
The Mad Hatter.
Mad Hatter is right, Rick. You lead by a score of 100-0. Boy, was that close. All right, here's question number two. It is worth 200 points. Here goes. Jerky movements... seizures and dementia are all symptoms of this bovine neurological disorder.
Rick.
Vito.
Rick was first.
Mad cow disease.
Absolutely right. Congratulations, Rick. Mad cow disease is absolutely
said
right.
No one ever in the last 20 years, but good job,
it's,
Bill.
Luckily, Wendy, we've eradicated most mad cow disease, although I understand he's still doing a morning show somewhere. Here it is. Question number three. It's worth 300 points. She grew up in Michigan, but somehow has a British accent.
Vito.
Vito, go ahead.
Madonna.
Madonna is right. You have tied the score at 300 apiece. Question number four is worth, as you'd guess, 400 points. Here goes. This AMC drama follows Don Draper and the cutthroat world.
Vito.
Vito.
Mad Men.
Mad Men is right. You have taken a commanding lead, 700 to Rick's 300. Here is the halfway point, question five. Worth 500 points. This publication's most constant cover boy is the
Gap.
Vito?
Mad.
Mad what?
Mad Magazine
is right. Very, very nice. 1,200 points to Rick's 300. But Rick, don't worry. There are still five questions on the board, all worth 600 through 1,000 points.
I'm not worried.
You're doing fine. If anything, you're overconfident. Here goes Vito with 1,200, Rick with 300. Question six. 600-point value. Here goes. This post-apocalyptic anti-hero was played first by Mel Gibson.
Vito.
Vito?
Mad Max.
Mad Max is right. You have 1,800 to Rick's 300. Rick, now you should worry.
Rick, you should check your buzzer. Let's hear it again.
Rick.
Yep, it's
right.
Working. Go ahead, Rick. What is your answer? I'm messing with you. Here is question seven. It is worth 700 points. Here goes. Surname, which was shared by two champions, both the manager of the 2016 Chicago Cubs and the coach of the 19...
Rick. I heard Rick Madden. First.
It was Rick first. Rick, who is it?
Madden.
Rick, you are absolutely right. It is Madden. Joe Madden and John Madden, but all we needed was Madden. You now have 1,000 points. Vito has 1,800. There are three questions left. It's anybody's game. Question eight, 800-point value. Here goes. This long-running book series uses a fill-in-the-blanks approach to create outrageous short stories.
Wendy!
Wendy, you're not eligible.
Oh. Come on, Wendy, help me out.
No.
I'm a lifeline. Wendy.
No.
Vito.
Anybody? I will read the question one more time. This long-running book series uses a fill-in-the-blanks approach to create an outrageous short story.
Rick.
Vito.
Rick.
Rick was first.
Mad Libs.
Mad Libs is absolutely right. Very nice. Rick, this gives you 1,800 points. Vito, you also have 1,800 points.
Oh, my gosh.
There are two questions left, one at 900, one at 1,000. Good luck, guys. It's very, very close. Question nine, worth 900 points. He is the speaker for the Illinois House of Representatives.
Vito.
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 Madigan.
Madigan is absolutely right. You have 2,700 points to Rick's 1,800. But, Rick, don't worry. There's one question left worth 1,000. Whoever gets this question right is the winner. If neither of you get it right, Vito's our winner. Question 10, worth 1,000 points. Good luck, guys. This children's literary classic centers around a 7-year-old redhead.
I heard Rick.
Rick, you're
Rick.
First. Go on, Rick. What is it?
7-year-old classic.
Come on, Rick. Don't Google it.
Yeah, you got
time's
10
ticking
seconds.
Quickly.
Vito, you know, I was. Vito, I was going to say you're being impatient.
I'll read the rest of the question for you, Vito. This.
What was Rick? Rick said nothing?
Rick did not have an answer. The rest of the question reads as follows. This children's literary classic centers around a 7-year-old redhead, the smallest in her Parisian boarding school. Vito, do you want to take a chance?
Rick.
No, Rick. Vito?
I believe I already won, right?
Vito, what's the answer?
You can't lose, either way.
I can't lose, but I'm going to say Madeline.
Madeline is right. Vito, right. You are our champion. Rick, you put up an incredible battle right till the very end, but on that
good
last
job,
Madeline
Rick.
Question... The youngest one was Madeline. The winner is you, Vito. Congratulations.
All right, Rick, hang on. Stay tight for a second because Rick will give you a consolation prize. But, Vito, you got a 4-pack of tickets to the family musical Madagascar. It's happening live on stage through August 27th, Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier. And you get to meet the cast for autographs and get some photos taken. Rest of you can get tickets at chicagoshakes.com.
Now I'm really mad as hell.
You want to come with me, Rick?
Oh, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something?
I don't know which to give.
My youngest child is 25. So, and
hey, I got a 9-year-old. My oldest is 31.
Oh.
So we're good.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun.
Mine are 29, 27, and 25.
All right. Well, Rick, why don't you share a Lou Malnati's pizza with them? Okay, sound a little more excited with your kids. A Lou Malnati's gift certificate.
I heard Rick just with his sigh say, "I'm lactose intolerant," but that sounds delicious. That's what it sounded like.
I'm in the insurance business. I once had a couple of clients. She was lactose intolerant, and he was gluten free. She said, "You don't want to watch us eat pizza."
Yeah, that would be bad.
Rick, I have to take away 400 points for that story. I apologize, but it's what I must do.
Hey, Rick, in third. Hang on a second. Great job, Vito. Congratulations, and you boys hang on. And Kevin, you deal with them now. That's all I got to say. But here's what Rick won, a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago. You started that train a rolling.
I did start that.
Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online. At loumelnatis.com. That was a fine game.
Everybody played well, Wendy, and that's all that's important. All right, we will take a quick break and then a little bit more coming your way next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, we're getting a lot of requests for Rick's gluten story. Yes, it's available on podcast. Just go to our webpage and you can listen to it in the privacy of your own home.
This honest to God is why I miss these games so much, because I love these listeners.
Yeah, me too.
Now you know how Steve Harvey feels.
Now I do know how Steve Harvey feels. Yes,
but
I
you
do.
Handled it way better.
But like Steve Harvey, here's what I learned from him. You just have to put a shocked face on. Like, that's what I was doing. I was doing my Steve Harvey, I'm shocked face. That's what I learned from him.
Doesn't work on the radio, Bill.
No, it has to be more visual. There's no doubt about this. All right, so here's what happens every day at 12 o'clock. Wendy and me, we go to the stream. It's unbridled. It's whatever we feel like. We can talk about whatever we want. It's
it really
the stream,
is.
And it's a lot of fun. And if you haven't been listening, we invite you to listen. Just go to our Facebook page. That's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook. Or go to WGNradio.com, and there's an easy link that will get you to the stream so you can listen to us there.
And Bridget Carey will be on with us right at noon.
Yeah. Bridget Carey, who's normally on with us for Tech Tuesdays here on terrestrial radio, will join us on the stream today, and we'll talk about what's going on in the world of science and sometimes science fiction. I don't know if you saw this story or not, but Facebook has been working on robots. Did you know this?
Yes.
And it's not going well.
Are these robots that communicate with one another?
Yes. So are you aware of what they're doing? Facebook started this thing where they've got Facebook robots, but the robots invented their own language. So Facebook decided they needed to stop this immediately because
they're going
to
take over the world and kill us.
It's the plot line of every sci-fi movie that's ever been made.
And, you know, it's interesting to me that computers are communicating. I know they're smart and all, but usually there's a human person behind it at some point.
Right. The way it's normally worked, and we've seen this in the last several years, is that more and more computers are integrated so that they can communicate with each other. But now what they've decided to do, the computers, and again, I know this sounds like a sci-fi movie, but they've decided to eliminate the middleman, which is us, and just do this on their own with their own language. Here's a story that was in the Telegraph in England. This just ran yesterday. Facebook has shut down a pair of its artificial intelligence robots after they invented their own creepy language.
Creepy's in there?
It says creepy. Researchers at Facebook Artificial Intelligence Research built a chatbot earlier this year that was meant to learn how to negotiate by mimicking human trading and bartering.
Jimmy Mack calls me a chatbot.
I'm sure he means it as a compliment.
Yeah,
I'm positive. But when the social network paired two of the programs, which were nicknamed Alice and Bob, to trade against each other, they started to learn their own bizarre form of communication. The chatbot conversation led to a divergence from human language as the agents developed their own language for negotiating, the researchers said. Now, you would almost think that the researchers would be proud of this and say, wow, this is excellent. We invented them for one thing.
Taught them well.
Quickly, yeah, but because they have also seen the same sci-fi movies that you and I have seen, they realized that within minutes they would use it to destroy the planet, if not the galaxy.
That's scary to me.
Nobody wants that. The two bots, or robots.
Bob and Alice. Where's Carol and Ted?
They're not built for that. They're just built for communicating and trading and bartering. The two bots were supposed to be learning to trade balls, hats, and books. That's why we invented robots, so that they could trade balls and hats and books. Assigning value to the objects and then bartering them between each other. But since Facebook's team assigned no reward for conducting the trades in English, the chatbots quickly developed their own terms for the deals.
That's really cool to me and really scary.
It's way scarier than it is cool. It should just be cool. When you look at this from a distance, you go, that's excellent. They evolved so quickly. They said, we don't need to play by the humans' rules. We'll make up our own rules. This is better.
Hell from 2001, Space Odyssey, is what's really freaking me out
right now.
Right. Because that's your big robot going against you.
Yes. The HAL 2000? Is that what it was called? Yeah. Don't worry, Dave. Everything's in order.
Yeah, and he got locked out.
It got ugly.
The HAL 9000.
HAL 9000. Thank you, Bob.
Daisy.
Yes.
Right. Daisy.
Did you ever see, boy, so many movies are coming to mind, but the one that stands out is a movie called The Demon Seed with Fritz Weaver.
Yes.
Where he invented, I don't remember why he invented this robot. It was just to do household chores, wasn't
Proteus.
It?
Proteus. It was Proteus.
Proteus was its name?
Yeah.
And it was very bad. Rude to Julie Christie. Ooh. Very rude.
But did it get the house clean?
Yeah, the house was spotless.
But then there's that scene where he heats the floor.
Yes.
Because he wants to burn her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't be burning Julie Christie. There's no reason.
My floor's hot. Clean, yes.
But not hot.
No.
That's awful. I'm so proud of both of you for seeing The Demon Seed. It's such an obscure movie.
I would have never known Fritz Weaver.
Fritz Weaver and Julie Christie and a very angry robot. Very angry.
Computers are nothing like that now.
No. Nope.
I still don't trust them. I'm sorry. They don't have emotions.
But there's,
which would make for a good girlfriend for some guys out there.
I know.
No emotions? There's a dream girl.
There's this set of robot laws that I want to say was invented by Isaac Asimov, Bob. Does that
That's
sound right?
Right. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So one of the primary rules for robots, if they decide to abide by the rules for robots, is that they shall not harm humans or their creators. Unfortunately, you would have no sci-fi movies if all robots adhere to those rules.
All right.
So, you know.
But come on. Kids turn on their parents, dogs and other animals. A boa constrictor turns on their owners.
Right.
I don't know.
So as much as you think everything is the way it's supposed to be.
Who plays by the rules anymore?
Nobody plays by the rules anymore.
You don't have to anymore. You can do whatever you want.
Nope. That's true. It's sad but true. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then Steve Bertrand, the Bertrand 9000, will join us. Steve has been replaced by the Bertrand 9000. We'll find out what it has planned next. Maybe world domination. We'll see. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.